This is tape number two of a conversation with Danny Menendez on May 22nd, 1991. Danny, the conclusion of the last tape, let me interrupt and change the topic in terms of, oh, that's the mama cat, I guess, of your being a principal architect of the Montreal Expo's success when they assigned you as a special assistant to the president and general manager, John McHale. And for the record, would you highlight some of the contributions that you think you gave to the Montreal Expos in building that major league team?
Well, I hate to be immodest, but
no, please don't be.
But I must state the fact that it was the signing of Bill Gullickson, Scott Sanderson, Timmy Raines, all in that 1 year, which was the biggest year that we had. Charlie Lee, Dave Palmer, and a few more. And you say, well, how or why did this all happen?
Well, I that's remarkable all that would happen in such a short period of time.
It's just the way the cards are dealt. Like when you're playing a game of rummy.
Well, explain how the cards were dealt that this occurred.
Direct answer to your question, how does it happen? Or mm-hmm. How are the cards dealt? Well, it starts with effort. You can't have good signings, have a good scouting department with a lazy scouting personnel. They have to want, just like a good hitter. He's got to believe, and he's got to want that base hit. He can't be a nibbler up there. He's got to be an attacker to attack the ball.
Is that what you saw in Tim Raines?
I did not think Tim Raines was going to be as good a ball player as he was. As it turned out, he was signed as a shortstop. Didn't quite have an arm for a shortstop. Had to be moved over to second base. Had a lethargic approach to the game. Had to be talked to several times about hustling in and out. That I mentioned earlier in our conversation about one thing that I remember, the remark of Branch Rickey saying, run in and out that field. Timmy was not. He was not knowingly loafing, but he just, as I mentioned, just lethargic.
Mm-hmm.
He was talked to about three times. You either hustle or you don't play.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't realize he was looking so poorly. Tim Raines' attraction obviously was his legs. He could run. He was not a good infielder. He was just kind of a stabbing infielder, a jerky,
mm-hmm.
quick motion, but not smooth and
graceful.
Fluid,
but more,
no. And of course, you can't read what goes on in their mind. Little did anybody know that Tim was going to be so forceful of an intensive performer. He's mm-hmm. He's a hard player. He plays hard.
Mm-hmm. But you had a number of pitchers that were signed: Palmer,
mm-hmm.
David Palmer, Scott Sanderson, Bill Gullickson, and Charlie Lee. That's quite a crew all in one time. I think Gullickson, of course, was a free agent.
Mm-hmm. The same time that we signed Palmer, we almost signed Dave LaPointe, who later on made the big leagues.
Mm-hmm.
Had him in a tryout camp. But again, to show how sometimes you make yourself, you reach your pinnacle because you want it so badly. The point did not have what I called major league stuff. But he wanted to pitch in the big leagues, and he did. And his arm in comparison to Palmer, there wasn't any comparison. Mm-hmm. Palmer's arm was better, more alive. And
so you saw something in all these that all these men that you told John McHale that, hey, let's sign them. They can turn around the franchise and make it a pennant contender.
Not that affirmatively, no.
You held back a little bit.
They were not that prominent yet. They qualified, and again I repeat, you got to read in what's inside their heart right here. How bad they want it.
We would all like to be mind readers, but I mean. You've been in the baseball game for nearly 60 years, starting out, you know, as a high school kid. You must have seen something in Tim Raines that say, hey, he's got the heart to do it. You're going to need some coaching, some hard talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He could have drifted. Yeah.
Well, you see it in their eyeballs when you look at them and see if they're looking past you or listening to you. Or
usually they're just scared kids. Really, that's
even when they come up to the majors.
Well, not so much being scared because they're beginning to assimilate the atmosphere now, but when they're first signed and they go away to their first spring training, you feel for them because you know that there's something trembling inside there,
mm-hmm.
and everything depends on what they do the next 6 days.
Yeah, they got a lot of eyes looking at them as to whether or not they're going to pack their bags and be sent off to a farm team.
Are released.
Or released.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, of course, if you could read 100% right all the time, you'd be fantastic.
Well, we probably wouldn't be here talking. You'd be doing a lot of helping a lot of clubs rebuild themselves. Mm-hmm. Certainly, that comes with any profession. So let's take you're now go to the topic of what do you look for when you go out to a ball game today, either as just a fan or as a scout. Hustle, indeed.
Yeah. If I see a lethargic ball player, I get lukewarm on him. He's going to have to undo that first impression.
You think it might be a wrong impression, so you're looking at that carefully and see how consistent that lack of hustle or lethargic feeling is.
Because some ball players are on stage, and they're really not showing you the true person. But I look for one who is enjoying himself. As I mentioned earlier in our conversation, the good ball players enjoy the game. They have fun playing.
Let's take a pitcher. Let's take a kid with comes in, either plays with the Fort Lauderdale Yankees, you don't have to name any particular person, or on the visiting teams. You're sitting behind the home plate up there at the stadium. What are you looking for? What would you, as a scout and as a lover of the game, look for to see just what kind of quality of pitcher that is? I mean, other than, of course, if the opposing team gets a few home runs, that tells you something and what the score is. But aside from the necessarily the kinds of hits or the number of hits and the score of the game.
Well, there's a contradictory expression. You go out and you look for somebody who can throw hard. But yet, that isn't what really wins ball games. It's position. It's where you
positioning the pitch?
Where you throw that ball. And you can throw as well as I can throw. You can throw as hard as I can throw.
Mm-hmm.
But your ball moves a little bit. Mine's straight.
Okay.
So you're likely to have more success than I am. So you've got what's known as a live arm.
Mm-hmm.
Digressing a bit, but one of my ex-teammates, when I owned a ball club, recommended a young 18-year-old boy. He's telling me how great a pitcher he was, this and that. And I mentioned about his ability as a pitcher. He said, well, he hasn't pitched, but I said, well, you just told me he was a pitcher. Well, he's only pitched one game, Dan, but he can throw. And this man that's talking was an ex-professional pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, well, he should know what a pitcher has to have to win in minor leagues. So I went to see the boy. And everything he threw looked like it was hitting a gale and taking off.
Mm-hmm.
Just flying. We asked him, my manager then was Danny Murtaugh. I asked Danny to come down in the bullpen and take a look at him. Danny asked him to throw a curveball, and the kid looked down the ground, blushed, and he says, Mr. Murtaugh, I don't know how. 2 years later, he was pitching in the big leagues with the Chicago Cubs, and I signed him for nothing, sold him for $50,000. That was just pure luck, really, and loyalty of one of my ex-teammates.
Mm-hmm.
I gave him a $500 check.
Do you see if a pitcher, of course, if he's got hop, if he's got a good curveball, do you see where when the catcher gives him a target that he can get it within that target mm-hmm. of 3 or 4 inches?
Now, yes.
The batter might hit it. It might be an inside pitch. It may be on the curve on the outside. But if the catcher gives him that where to throw it, and he can do that consistently,
makes him attractive, because you know,
makes him more attractive in your
he's
eyes.
He's got command of his pitches. Mm-hmm. Like you see some of these kids that are pitching down here now. They have good stuff. There's a boy that pitched yesterday, or day before yesterday, was it? Mark Hutton's his name. He's from Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Most unlikely place to pick up a ball player.
Yes, I think it would be.
Yeah. And he's a big leaguer in my book.
Mm-hmm.
But he gets the ball over, and we'll see what happens to him.
So control over where he can throw the ball to where the catcher wants to throw him. What about pitching sequence? You look at that as something of pitcher, or that's the catcher's responsibility?
Catcher can get you in trouble or keep you out of trouble.
And what would you say if you saw a pitcher throwing off too many catcher
signals?
What would you say about that at this level of league play?
They better get together. He's got to show a little respect for the catcher's judgment,
mm-hmm.
because otherwise that's a obtuse rejection. He's saying no to everything. I'm signaling, says the catcher,
mm-hmm.
and that doesn't make for a good relationship. And a good pitcher, of course, gives the catcher benefit of some knowledge. Said, well, if he thinks it should be a curveball, then I better throw my curveball more often.
Mm-hmm.
Again, to get to the crux of the question that you asked me, what makes a pitcher better than another pitcher? Command of his stuff. Not necessarily the quality of his stuff. Obviously, it has to be to a certain degree of a quality pitch, but command is what wins ball games.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see some pitchers out there just throwing the ball, and you figure, well, he's not throwing that really that hard, but he's getting them out because he's keeping the ball, like you mentioned, low on the outside, and everything they hit is just a ground ball. trying to pull it,
mm-hmm.
that ball, that it should be going to the right field with it. But he commands it down there and keeps it low and away. He's getting them out.
So that positioning of the ball, even though the batter might hit it for a home run, but if he can position that ball in a certain location where that catcher wants it, and he can do that consistently,
mm-hmm.
That's one of the things you look for, and what kind of hop on that fastball.
Right. That's why they often say, oh, wait till he's been around the league a couple of times. They'll find him out. You know?
Mm-hmm.
That's, catcher has to retain that in his mind. This man, he's a tough, high ball hitter.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly if you try to crowd him a little bit, because
mm-hmm.
he just yields enough to be able to get that fat part of the bat out, but he's vulnerable down below. Keep that.
He's going to make those mental notes and better
right.
put those down on a piece of paper mm-hmm. When he because he probably knows that hitter as well as anybody
right.
on that
right.
team. Let's take this for a fan or for a scout like you. You go out before the game, you see some batting practice, infield practice. What do you look for from the ball players during the pregame drills?
As a hitter, I look for, and I'm the only one I know that uses this terminology, rhythm in the wrist.
Rhythm in the wrist?
If that hitter's got
that's
that.
That's a Danny Menendez special, rhythm in the wrist. Okay.
If he shows that rhythm in the wrist, that's smoothness, and one who does is Hank Aaron.
Okay.
Anybody that's seen Hank Aaron hit know that he's got those quick wrists, that rhythm in the wrist. That's where he
okay, now the good
it.
Lord gave him that talent. Is
right.
there any way to develop that? That you, any particular drills,
only,
Danny?
Only to a degree. They build up wrist strength.
Mm-hmm. Some calisthenics or some weight lifting.
And participate swinging mm-hmm. because with practice comes more dexterity.
Yeah. You find many of the ball players do that kind of drill to accent or to maximize that rhythm in the wrist.
Well, they're always swinging double bat, a couple of bats or a leaded bat, you know.
Okay, or put that ring on one bat and
yeah.
Do it that way. What else, let's say an infielder, what are you looking for in the pregame drills?
Well, a good infielder's got to stay off those heels, like I mentioned before. Stay off the back of those heels. Get up on those toes.
Get there on the ball of your
foot. And get positioned. Don't keep those feet close together. Spread them out. So you can go left and
what
right.
About shoulder length? I mean, you get them too spread out and you can't move.
Right.
But
that's right. Just
maybe a little bit more than shoulder
mm-hmm.
length.
Just stay loose. That's why a kid will play much better his second year than he did his first year. And there's not really that much time left.
Mm-hmm.
But there is in his makeup. It's that second year he's nice and easy. He's at ease.
Mm-hmm.
He's enjoying it.
Mm-hmm. Let's take during the game now. That second baseman made an error. Let in a run. He comes up to bat the next inning. What do you look for in that batter who made an error and brought in an unearned run, and he's now up to bat? What do you look for?
Nothing other than what you look for before the game started. In other words, you look at the hitter as far as bat speed, getting right back to that.
Well, what I was thinking about was, you see, if he's still thinking about that error that he made out there on the field.
He shouldn't, and 9 out of 10 won't really.
So that's not a big factor. Most
no.
of them would shrug it off and
yeah.
Get their concentration on batting rather than thinking about that error they
correct.
Made.
Correct. Right.
the game that we went to a couple of weeks ago, the center fielder made a couple of lackadaisical plays. One, not coming up on a ball that when the score was only 2-1.
I made note of that, too.
And another time when he threw into home plate and threw well off the mark.
Right. That's two black marks that he's got. And I would not be interested in purchasing his contract. I would not.
Oh, you would not. You think that would be indicative of his skill or his concentration on the game?
Yes. His attitude towards it. I would say he's not as intensified as he should be.
Mm-hmm.
Getting to intensity. Pete Rose. Where would Pete Rose be today without the intensity that was in his makeup?
He'd been just an average ball player.
He wasn't what you call a barn burner as a runner. He gave you that extra effort, obviously, but you put him alongside of Timmy Raines, and Timmy Raines would beat him from here to that wall. But nobody could out-hustle Pete Rose.
That's right. And yet he was ridiculed by a lot of ball players when he came up in the early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie Hustle, the nickname, was really one of ridicule.
Right, that's exactly right.
And yet he overcame that, and then it became a nickname of respect.
Right. Yeah.
That takes a lot of guts for a ball player when his peers are bad-mouthing him to stick with that no matter what they're saying behind his back.
Yes.
You think that the inside pitch, Lou Burdett said that what he missed about baseball was that confrontation between the hitter and batter. He said that's baseball.
Mm-hmm.
That's the essence of baseball. And he liked to move his pitches in. He knew what his territory was and what was the batter's territory. And if that batter invaded a couple of inches of Lou Burdett's territory...
That's right, you establish your territory.
You think the umpires are overreacting to the inside fast pitch?
Well, it's been so for years. You know, anytime that pitch gets in on the inside of that plate, you've got some dancing dolls up there that jump around like that.
So they fake it a little bit?
Yeah, they're being branded with a hot iron. There's some timid ones, and there's some...
I'm sorry?
There's some timid ones, but there's some guys that will take it in the hip or the back. Remember Hunt, the infielder? He played for Expos, and he played for the Mets. His first name slips me, but he holds the record for being hit by a pitch ball.
I thought Don Baylor owned the Major League record. But anyway, you're talking about Hunt.
That's funny. His name slips me, and I know him as well as I know him.
He just didn't move.
No. And he'd always pat himself. He always had a pad under his shirt.
Sponge, protect his ribs?
Sponge pad. No. I want to say Kenny Hunt, but Kenny Hunt was the pitcher.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember. A big topic today, the quality of supply of ball players. We've seen the, many ways, decimation of the minor leagues and more players coming directly out of college,
mm-hmm.
right up to the majors. I heard that today's player is bigger, stronger, and faster, and gets accordingly promoted more quickly up mm-hmm. into the major leagues, where he has to learn a lot of the basics that should have been learned in the minor leagues. You think that can be reversed, or is that a misjudgment that...
I think it'll sift itself down. When they see that they're making too much of accelerated promotions,
mm-hmm.
and mistakes, stupid mistakes are being made on the field of the play, that they'll back it up again like it used to be. It used to be a 5-year program.
Mm-hmm. To get to the majors?
Move a step up each year.
Mm-hmm.
But now...
What is it, about a 2 or 3 year program?
2 now, and it should be 3, I think.
You think if we had more AAA ball teams, that would slow down becoming a rookie?
I think so.
You think that's going to happen? You think we're going to go back to having more AAA clubs the way we did 20, 30,
yes.
40 years ago?
Yes. Yes, particularly with expansion of the Major League clubs.
That's right. We're going to have 2 more National League teams, and maybe someday, in another 15 years, we could have a team from the Caribbean, maybe even Japan, in the Major Leagues.
It used to be such a mark of distinction to be a professional ball player, even in your own little town.
Mm-hmm.
Today it's more commonplace.
Well, maybe it's because when you and I were growing up, when you talk about professional sports, everybody thought about baseball. You know, the National Football League was not given more than a couple of column inches on the third page.
Mm-hmm.
Same way with the NBA. Soccer was unheard of in America.
Yeah.
You didn't have professional track and field teams, and you have a little bit of that today, at least some of the better athletes. So there's a lot more competition for that athletic quality
mm-hmm.
than certainly 40 years ago. And maybe also because they're on television so much that after a while they become rather common compared to when you had to only see their picture occasionally mm-hmm. in the newspaper or hear about them on radio, and they left more to the imagination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Danny, I think we can have another interview perhaps at another time, if you so wish, on some other topics that we may not have covered. But are there some individuals, you talked about Frank Lane, Branch Rickey, and what they meant to you in your career. Are some other, a couple of other people, whether in baseball administration or out on the field, that you think epitomize the beauty of the game?
I started my front office career with the New York Yankee organization, and I succeeded Lee McPhail, who was general manager of the Kansas City Blues.
Mm-hmm.
So I came under their influence. George Weiss, a real stickler for detail.
I don't think he had many friends on the...
Well, he was a driver. If you had a dollar bill and you wanted somebody to guard it, you'd give it to George Weiss.
Okay.
And Lee McPhail was a wonderful man to succeed because he was so giving in his knowledge. He was kind. Had a younger brother that had a lot of personality, much more so than Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Lee just won you over by his sincerity.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that he was genuine. Bill McPhail, the younger one, had a lot of bubble to him. But I'd say George Weiss, by the standards he set, and Lee McPhail by the kindness he showed me, and obviously Frank Lane by the opening.
Who opened that door mm-hmm. for you. Danny, thank you very much for being part of this interview and sharing some of your memories and ideas about the grand game of baseball.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.